Happy birthday, Dan.
Hi. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's good, but it's your birthday.
It's your birthday.
Dan Morin, it's your birthday. Did you eat a cake donut?
I did not eat a cake donut. I ate a bagel, which is like a donut, but not really.
But nothing like a birthday cake.
It's true. It's nothing. I will save that for later today.
Did you have cream cheese on it?
I did have cream cheese on
it. Well, that's practically like frosting.
It's the only way to have a bagel, Jason. Let's be clear.
It's not the only way, but it's the best way.
It's definitely the best way. There's a really good bagel shop near me, and I tried out this morning. On Fridays, they sometimes have, like, not exactly experimental, but like things they don't make the rest of the week. So I had an egg everything bagel, which was fantastic.
That's in John Syracuse's list of approved bagel flavors, I think.
Don't get me started on John Syracuse's list of approved bagel flavors. We have different opinions on some things.
John and I did a whole episode of Robot or Not about that I think isn't out yet. So let that be a teaser to people who are listening this. I actually walked it down with him. I was like, let's break this down. Why do you say this? And
his canonical list does not include garlic, which to me is a massive oversight.
Yeah, and
so
yet,
I'll just throw that there.
The thing that he mentions the most, of course, is that he has everything. Mm-hmm.
But not the components of everything.
I know, right?
I don't understand.
I don't know. That guy, he's great, but he's hilarious. He does occasionally admit that you know, it's about what you grow up with. And
sure.
Right. It's not just.
It's nurture. It's nurture.
Yeah, I guess so. He also opposes, he opposes fruit bagels, because I like a blueberry bagel. Mm-hmm. I'll eat a blueberry bagel plain, because I like it so much. And with cream cheese, it's good, too. And I know that may be heresy, and I'm from California, so whatever. But
it's fine, man. I'm not a bagel prescriptionist.
And yet
I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, you're more of a descriptivist when it comes to bagels.
Right.
He does approve cinnamon raisin bagels, which I have no time for. I find cinnamon raisin... First off, it turns out I'm really finicky about cinnamon. Like, there are certain things where I really like cinnamon and other things I don't. My wife has Lauren makes tea that's got the cinnamony smell in it. And it's like, I can't even be in the kitchen when that tea is being made. Cause it's just like, my God, this stinky tea. And yet I love cinnamon rolls. So go figure. And then raisins in things. I think it's really about the raisins. I don't like raisins in things. I don't mind raisins. I just don't want them hiding in things like little landmines.
Yeah, I'm okay with cinnamon raisin as a bagel flavor.
Yeah,
my girlfriend's, that's my girlfriend's preferred flavor. So I had to go get her one this morning as well. Yeah. Yes, I am recording. She's sitting behind me, though.
This is the beauty of the secret podcast, is we leave all doors open and people participate in the podcast if they're walking by.
It's not my top choice, but I'll eat one.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. It's something about the raisins. It turns out, especially when I was younger, I'm a little less affected by it now than I was then, but there's a consistency thing. I'm sensitive to consistency, and I like everything to be sort of like evenly distributed, even if it's like a bunch of different consistencies. I want those evenly distributed. So like a salad, I want it like really tossed.
Yeah,
burrito, I want like all the stuff like throughout.
Mixed together. Yeah.
And so, you know, a raisin is contrary to this philosophy, is what I'm saying.
I can understand that. I think I know where you're coming from with that. I feel like I had more of an issue with that when I was younger as well, but I feel like I've largely grown out of it.
Yeah.
But I can totally sympathize with it, because I definitely have memories of being opposed to finding surprise consistencies somewhere.
Yeah. Look,
it's one of the reasons I really don't like, I don't really like eating fruits that have like pits. Because for similar reasons, because like I don't like the idea that I'm going to have to like remove something. Like you're giving me a thing is edible, but parts of it are not edible.
The watermelon, that was always my thing. Now they don't even make watermelons with seeds that you can't just chomp on and eat. But it used to be you had the hard black seeds in the watermelon, and it was just like, that's a lot. I know.
Yeah, I don't mind cherries, but I don't like eating cherries like raw, with, you know, just sort of like, you know, when there's still pits in them, basically. So, these are difficult things. Fortunately, most of these things can be solved these days.
They can, yeah. We've destroyed everything and replaced it with something that's easier. So, yay, I guess.
Right, and then robots will do that to us eventually. So,
right. It's only fair. It's only fair. It's only right. So, what's going on? Apple's got its quarterly results next week, I realized.
That's right.
Earlier this week. This time I actually thought of it a few weeks beforehand. I get that memo where I'm like, oh, geez, I wonder if they announced the date. It must be coming up. And, well, and it, rather than it being tomorrow, it was like 2 weeks out. So I put it on my calendar and now it's coming up on Tuesday.
It's unusual because it's at the beginning of a month and usually it's at the end of a month. I assume that's just how the calendar fell. But usually you'll see it like late at the end of April. And this year it's early May.
Yeah.
So a little unusual, but I'm sure it's just like that was the convenient Tuesday or whatever after the quarter ended.
Exactly. Because the quarters are kind of like it's all a little bit weird. But yeah, I wrote a thing for Macworld this week about it because here's my thought process was, is there an Apple quarterly result coming up? Yes, there is. It's on this date. And then I need to write a Macworld column this week. Oh, last time Susie asked me to write a preview column about the results, I'll just do that again. So
there you go.
That's four columns a year previewing it, four columns a year about the results. That's 8 of 52. That's pretty good.
That's a pretty good percentage. Yeah.
You got 52 columns a year. You know, it's hard. Yeah,
I do. It's nice when there's news that like comes out on that day. So yesterday, for example, as I was writing my column, there was the report in Recode about Apple doing peer-to-peer payments, like working on a peer-to-peer payment service using Apple Pay, probably. And I love when those things come out because I'm like, oh, great, there's a topic. I can write a column about that. And so I did. It's nice when those things appear, but like you often hit those doldrum periods for weeks on end where there seems to be no real news.
Yeah.
And then you have to like rack your brains and be like, oh, what's interesting? What have I thought about lately? And sometimes you come up with really great ideas that are like, you know, kind of out of the blue, but that's nice because they get a lot more attention. And sometimes you just scrape the bottom of the barrel and you try to find something that is remotely interesting.
Yeah. The Senate ID cards.
Oh, yeah.
Was a great story this week.
That was a fantastic story. I could not believe as I read that, scrolled through my RSS reader, and as I looked at it, I did like a double take, like, wait. What? So is that suggesting what I think it's suggesting?
So they have an ID, a standard Department of Defense ID card design.
Right.
But not everybody has the smart chip that's embedded in it that you're supposed to get to include like for security.
Right, which is, you know, on the face of it, it's like, okay, sure, sometimes they roll those things out like slowly, gradually to different people. That's fine. Like if there are cars that just don't have that chip yet, I'm sure they get replaced somewhere down the road. But what made it particularly egregious was that those cars that didn't have one, they printed a picture of the chip on it, which is completely and utterly non-functional because it's a picture of a chip.
Yeah, this is...
And how do you get away with that?
Spotted by Ars Technica, it is a letter from U.S. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon. And the key paragraph, just to read it. Moreover, in contrast to the executive branch's widespread adoption of personal identity verification cards with a smart chip, most Senate staff ID cards have a photo of a chip printed on them rather than a real chip.
And you wonder why we have these lengthy debates about encryption in the Congress, right? Because it's clear to me that people don't understand it, right? Like, there are probably people who do think that having a picture of a chip is just as functional for some reason.
And there's some brilliant things about this, right? I mean, the idea here is that you need to tag in or insert your card in order to get access. It's your second factor. Right. And so it means that it's less likely that somebody is going to, for example, look at stuff that's on your computer because you've got this smart card that comes with you that is your verification of identity. Except if you're in Congress, then you don't have that, or at least some of them don't have it. Maybe the senators do, but the staff doesn't.
Yeah, staff does not. And maybe they don't need that as often, or maybe the infrastructure is not there for them to take advantage of it. But as I pointed out in the link I wrote, it's like giving somebody one of those cardboard credit cards that comes in your credit card offer and being like, yeah, that's a valid credit card. Yeah. Go nuts with it. Like,
and by the way, this is a picture of my family.
Yeah, exactly. And a wallet. Yeah, a wallet came with a picture of my family.
Yeah. on a pretend credit card. Can I use this? I guess I can. There's a credit card in here. Let's try it. Let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens.
I'm going to run. Sir, what are you doing? I'm running this piece of cardboard through your credit card reader and it doesn't fit. It's too thick.
No, that's fine. You have to insert it, not swipe it.
Yeah, it's contactless. Just tap the piece of cardboard on the top and see what happens.
And this comes back to that the peer-to-peer payment thing, because I think that is an interesting direction. I'm kind of surprised Apple hasn't done it already. Because it strikes me as it is a problem. It's a problem that's sort of been solved, but it hasn't been solved well because of the fact there are so many competing services. Yes, if you want to send money to someone else directly using your phone, there's probably a way to do it. But the problem is because there are so many different services that are cropped up, if you don't have the same service, it gets very difficult all of a sudden. Because if you want to say, oh, can I PayPal that to you? And someone else is like, well, I only use Venmo or whatever, right? Like, then either, I mean, if you're someone who does this a lot, maybe you have accounts on all these different services, which is itself kind of annoying because then you have to manage accounts on a bunch of different services. But if you don't have a service in common, then you got to spend the time like, okay, I got to make an account, you know, like I download the app, I got to find, like I got to hook it up to my credit card, like all that is just kind of a nightmare. And so the idea that it seems to be, this Recode report suggests is that essentially Apple's been working with Visa to create sort of a virtual debit card, and Square has something like this in its Cash app. And the idea being like, if I send you money, it gets deposited into that virtual debit card and you can go ahead and use it. And like, it doesn't necessarily have to go through the banks or something like that. So it's like, right. It's available to you as like a debit purchase card. And that's handy for a variety of reasons, among which Recode pointed out, if you have kids or people who are not old enough to have a credit card or who don't want a credit card, that is another option because you can sort of sign up for that and use it as a stored value card. If it's a Apple Pay compatible virtual debit card, you can use it wherever you can use Apple Pay. So there's a lot that's smart about that. Obviously, the pushback potentially comes from the financial institutions, which may be saying like, whoa. Like, now we're going to let Apple basically have its own, you know, stored value card that so it doesn't like people don't need to use our credit cards. Like, you can understand why people might be upset about that. And this likely would not be revenue generation because in most of these cases, personal payments are not like the company doesn't get anything out of those. Like they don't generally charge either people, right? Like people won't use a service that's like, oh yeah, we'll transfer money from this person to this person, but we're going to charge you like this much. And so a lot of times they use that as a free thing to get people in the door so that they'll use their system. Now that you've signed up for a PayPal account, you will buy stuff online using PayPal and they will take a cut of that. Similarly, Apple does take a very small cut, I think, of the transactions with Apple Pay. Like it's like I want to say it's even like a fraction of a percent, and it charges that to the banks, and I guess it, you know, potentially makes it up on volume, but there's so little cost to Apple for using Apple Pay that like it doesn't matter as much.
Yeah, Mike and I talked about this on Upgrade a little bit the other week about I hear from people to be like Incomparable members or Six Colors members who say, I don't have a credit card. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to believe for, like, in the United States, at least, I can tell you, the if you have a bank account, you have a debit card that uses the credit card system, but it pulls the money directly out of your bank account.
Yep.
That apparently isn't true everywhere, because I get people not wanting to have a credit card, but not having, like, a card that
seems, yeah,
because this is basically our money transfer system is the credit card system, even though it's not always credit. That's the like frictionless money transfer thing. But I heard from people who are like, I don't have a card. I can't give you money. Can I PayPal it to you? And the answer was Memberful doesn't support PayPal. I can't do that. Right. And so what Mike and I were talking about is this idea of, can you just have like even not a card, but like a virtual card that pulls from your bank account? Because then you don't even have the physical card. And I don't know if that has issues in terms of, you know, these banks that aren't issuing debit cards to everybody by default, which is kind of interesting because, boy, in the U.S., they really don't want to do that. They will. I have cards for accounts that I never want a debit card for. It doesn't matter. They send them to me and I just have to put them in a drawer somewhere. So, yeah, I don't know. It's the reality here is there's the technical stuff And then there's the business model stuff, and they battle just like they do in TV, where it's like the banks are saying, well, wait, we got on board with Apple Pay. You're supposed to be our buddy. Don't do an end run around us and create your own virtual card, because
then
you're cutting us out of the process entirely, and we don't like that. And I get that, especially, and it is important for the banks to be involved in Apple Pay. So I don't know. It's a weird situation. Well,
and it's always been a weird situation because, you know, it's one of those things that fundamentally seems like it should not be that big a deal, right? Like, because I remember talking about this years ago with a friend. It was like, why is it? And this was back before, you know, any of these virtual payment things, like a lot of them weren't options or were much clunkier. And, you know, I remember sitting at lunch with a friend being like, why is it that the easiest way for me to give you money is to write you a check? Like, if I don't have cash, like, that seems ridiculous, because think of all the, like, I'm going to write you a check. You're going to take it to an ATM. You're going to like have the ATM scan it and turn it back into money. Why have we tokenized, you know, this transaction into paper? That seems like it should be totally redundant. Like, essentially, this is just an exchange that requires numbers to be moved around digitally. But I think a lot of it is just that infrastructure of the banking stuff. And maybe Mike knows more about this because I know he used to work in a bank. But like the infrastructure seems like it should be a lot easier to make this happen. And this is a thing that comes up in a lot of different places too, like especially in developing countries where, like, you know, credit cards and debit cards are basically not things that people have. And so you see a lot of stuff that involves paying with phones and like being able to like have like debit accounts on phones, store right. value accounts on phones. So yeah,
I don't know. I have definitely had that thing. Lex did this to me, where Lex had me sign up. Lex did this to me. It's a common phrase around people who know Lex. I had to sign up for Venmo to pay him, or for him to pay me, or I don't even remember what it was. But he's like, "Oh, sign up for Venmo." I'm like, "Okay," and I did it, and I've used it like three times. But I do see and I've sent people PayPal stuff too, and it's the same kind of thing. Like I get. Mm-hmm. I get that this could probably be better, and that's what Apple needs to do, is Apple needs to make it better. One of the challenges, I mean, if they use the credit card system, one of the nice things about it is the credit card system means that you don't have to be on a device with Apple Pay to get the money, ideally, right?
Right.
But I don't know. It's very, very complex. I like Apple trying to make things easier for people. I wish Apple Pay was accepted more places in the U.S. That's my big frustration with it, is that having seen it work in Europe, and like in the U.K., Apple Pay is so great because everybody's got contactless terminals, and here we don't. And so they're slowly rolling out, but like I still list where I can pay with Apple Pay instead of where I can't, and it's really disappointing after several years of this now, 2.5 years of this.
Yeah, I mean, I too am. There are a lot of places I go now that and you're never sure, I think, is the thing. Like, can I pay? I always hesitate pulling out my phone because if I don't see like a clear like Apple Pay sign, even if it has what looks like a wireless reader on the thing, I'm always worried I'll pull it out and nothing will happen and I'll look like an idiot standing there, like trying to tap my phone against a thing. And then you wonder, do I pull out my card? Do I try to swipe the card? Do I try to insert the card? There's just, for something that was supposed to get a lot easier, it really has not happened, because, you know, we were supposed to transition to the chip payments, and there are plenty of places that I still went. Like when I was down in Florida last week, it was literally different places within, like going to Disney World, different places within Disney World were like, no, you have to swipe. No, you insert the card if it's a chip card. And I'm like, how have you not even standardized this here? And so that was kind of a weird experience, just to be like, you know, it's 2 years or so after we've had this transition too, or I think it was 2 years ago in the fall. Why is this not? Yeah, why have we not solved this problem? And then there's the whole issue of like, well, you still have to sign for stuff most of the time. We haven't gotten rid of that. So yeah, I think this is a system that cries out to do better, but it's such a big entrenched system that it's hard for any one company, even a company as big as Apple, to fix it single-handedly.
What do you think of the Echo look? It's Dan's Echo Corner now. You sprung this on me on Wednesday on Clockwise. Now that there's been a couple of days, what do you think?
It's a weird product, but I can kind of understand why Amazon thinks this is a smart move for them. And I think one of them is, I do think that they're trying to get into a market that they have not, that they feel like is a big potential market.
Yeah,
and
I
think the big issue with this is I feel like all of us who are in the tech circles and are prognosticating about this, I don't think this is another one, yet another one of those technological gadgets where I say, I don't think this is for most of us. Like, I don't think this is a, I don't think we are the audience for this product. If you look at things like Instagram and Pinterest, there are huge numbers of users who are very engaged with fashion and very interested yep. in brands and very big on like taking pictures of their outfits and like cataloging those and collecting data about those. Like, that is a big thing. And I think Amazon has a much broader view, right, than our little technological segment of the market. The original Echo, I feel like, is very much a techie's gadget. It is not something that most people are going to put in their home. It is kind of a, almost more a proof of concept than an actual product. I mean, it's a good product, but I feel like it's something that's more like, let's put out this voice, you know, activated assistant and see if that has any interest. And it did very well, I think. And so they're looking at how can we expand that to other places in the home. And so I think that's interesting. I have no idea if it'll succeed or not. And I don't think Amazon will be particularly likely to give us any numbers on it. But I think there are challenges with it. People have talked about the privacy implications. Having a camera that is, you know, in your bedroom, obviously, is potentially worrisome. I did appreciate at least that in the a lot of the demo stuff, it looked like stuff they were showing off, like, put it in your closet with a door you can close. It's like, all right, that's low tech, but works. There are issues. I know Motherboard had a piece, which I didn't get a chance to quite to look at in depth yet, but about how long they store those images and like what the sort of privacy policy around that is. And so that's potentially going to be thorny. I was also correct. I actually got an email from Amazon PR after I wrote that story about it on Six Colors, and they wanted to correct that you can't buy stuff with your voice on the Echo Look. That is what they told me, and I was very surprised about that. You have to use the, like, you tap on something in the Echo Look app, and it will take you to the Amazon app on your phone. And it's like, well, that seems totally unintuitive when you have a device that can make purchases, like the Echo makes purchases with your voice. So I think that's a weird choice, but maybe that's coming later, or maybe there is a reason they decide not to do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I think that it might be a good idea. I still am not sure it's a good idea, but what I do know is that it's my initial reaction is... of confusion was led to kind of an understanding of what this product is for. If you look at the demo video, it is entirely about fashion. Mm-hmm. It is almost entirely women. It's only mm-hmm. women's voices. This is a product that is designed for people who are interested in fashion, that it's going to skew toward women. And I can see, you know, again, it may be a failure, but I can see the idea here of... that there's value to Amazon and potentially to the user. And that's why I'm skeptical. It's like, can they really pull it off where there's value to the user to do this? But right. If you can have a catalog of the things that you wore, and if Amazon can actually do machine learning that's helpful to you, whether
that's
it's
the big question.
The joke that I made to Marco Arment on Twitter is, Marco, you're wearing a black shirt again. You've worn a black shirt for 95 of the last 100 days. Maybe I should order you a blue shirt. But somebody suggested to me this idea of people who wore your clothes also liked. And I thought, if they could do that, that would be kind of brilliant in terms of providing advice for shoppers, but also driving sales. Is if your Amazon Echo Look can look at the clothes you wear and the colors you wear and the styles you wear, and this is the big if, you know, if it, machine learning stuff can really understand things about clothes, then it could be potentially kind of mind-blowing in terms of here's a different look you might like because I've seen what you wear. I mean, it's literally, I've seen what you wear, and here are some other things that people who wear stuff like you wear. That could be that could be huge. And, you know, selling clothes on the internet is really hard because you can't try them on. So this is, you know, potentially part of that. So I feel like I'm still skeptical of the tech, but I understand more what they're going for. I don't love the idea of a camera a Wi-Fi camera microphone product that is almost certainly going to be in people's bedrooms, because I already don't like the idea of those things in houses, and I try to unplug them when I'm not using them. So that one gives me pause, although I'm sure Amazon, if anybody's going to make sure it's locked down and safe, it's going to be Amazon. Still, it gives me some pause, but at least I feel like I understand the product more, and if they can pull it off, it could be really amazing to the people who care about you know, fashion and clothes shopping.
I think it is a big if, and we both saw our friend Matt Alexander, who obviously runs a bunch of clothing companies online, mentioned that, you know, his concern was style is something that is so subjective. How well will it work if it's really, like, in the sense that you're pointing out, like, people that wore clothes like yours also like these things, I think that makes a lot of sense. But in the sense of telling you this feature where it's like, which of these outfits looks better? Well, that's kind of dicey, I feel like, because, I mean, supposedly it's interpolated between machine learning and actual fashion people.
Experts.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but yes. And so maybe there's some human touch in there that's going to help sort of, you know, tilt it in the right direction, but it's very tricky. I was wondering if it might, you know, I know, for example, you as someone who has color blindness, I wondered if something like that where it's like, well, do my clothes match or something?
Right, sure.
If that's a potential application for some people or people who just want to feel like, hey, you know what? I want to dress more stylishly. Like maybe that's a potential customer base too. I don't know.
Also, if you've got tops and bottoms, you know, whether it's, you know, men or women, right? I wonder if there's that potential too, to say what goes with this.
Yeah, right.
Like, well, why don't you try this with this? Because then it learns your wardrobe, so it knows like what's in it. And I see how machine learning could be valuable in something like this happened to us the other week where we were going to an event that we go to every year, and Lauren said, I think I wore this to this event last year, so I need to change out of it. And like the machine would know that, and they'd be like, are you going to this event? Because you wore this a year ago last week, and that was the last time you wore it, right? I'd be like, oh, right. Okay. Good to know.
Well, and I think we'll see a lot more of that as if this product does catch on. I think we'll see them build out a lot more stuff like that. And it does really show, I mean, machine learning, I think in the next 5 years, that's going to be the biggest shift for all of our lives technologically related, is this machine learning stuff that is going to be applied in a bunch of places that, you know, you wrote a thing, was it on, I'm trying to remember where it was now.
It was in the
this month's newsletter.
Oh yeah, which I have to send out. I haven't sent it out.
Well, I won't spoil it too much, but you talk about like, can't we, you know, couldn't these assistants and these machine learning things be used to simplify tasks for us so much more? Like, shouldn't these assistants be able to understand when we say these, like, hey, like, do this thing for me, you know, or I've realized that you do this thing all the time. Let me simplify that for you. And I think that is going to be a huge impact of machine learning. And we do see it in, like, I think iOS is very subtle about it, but the ways that it pops up are really fascinating. Like things like if you use maps on Apple Maps on iOS, like sometimes I will like open it up and it gives you, has that like card that you can swipe up and it shows you like addresses and like search results. But a lot of times it's like stuff I searched for in maps on my other computer or something I Google, like not Google for, but like something it's related to a bunch of other things that I, you know, have looked for in the past. And so it's much smarter about realizing like, oh, you probably want to do this, or like somebody texted you this address, you probably want to find that address on the map. And so little things like that, and like the, you know, remembering where you parked your car, all those little details, I think are going to become more and more things that we expect our devices to do. And they're going to come up, these devices are going to get smarter and smarter about interpolating information and like sort of extrapolating information and all of that. Like, okay, here's a task that I'm going to take care of because it will make things much easier for you. And you're not even going to notice it because I'm just going to do it.
Yeah. We're not there yet.
We're not there yet, but I think that's become more exciting because it's stuff that we're actually seeing in action in small ways now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where else that goes.
Yeah, the danger with evaluating any product is the, you know, a lot of tech stuff is I can see how this will go to this destination, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not the same as saying what does it have today? Right. Because Amazon has a little bit of a track record with the Echo of every week there's another thing, you know, every few weeks there's another big thing. They just keep rolling little features out here and there. And that's great, because what I was going to say is you can never really assume that the product tech product you buy will ever do more than it does on day one. They'll promise, oh, no, there's a beta thing that's coming and sure, all that. But right. A lot of times those promises are rarely, you know, they're rarely delivered. And when they are delivered, they're often disappointingly delivered. Mm-hmm. And to get the really good feature, you need to buy the next one of it. So I'm a little hesitant. I think Amazon's got a bit of a track record here, but I'm a little hesitant in terms of like what credit can I give them? Because the way their stuff is right now, the way all these intelligent agents are right now, I kind of don't believe. I see the potential here, but I kind of don't believe the present.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of those things I would say is a good piece of technology advice is like buy the product for what it is today, not what you hope it will be, because there will always be a new version of that product. And like if it doesn't do what you want it to do right now, chances are it won't do that between now and whenever the next version comes out.
Yep.
So there's some advice for you.
Good advice from Dan. Anything else? You should go enjoy your birthday. It's your birthday. Did you know it's your birthday?
Happy birthday to me.
They say it's your birthday.
They do say it's my birthday. Yeah, I'm going to enjoy my day. Got some plans lined up. I actually this is the total pimpage here, but I just posted something on my own blog that is like I consider a birthday present for me, but for other people that I want to share, which is I got you may have heard I have a book coming out.
I did hear that.
And so I posted, among other things, I hired Mr. Forgotten Towel, or Frank, as we sometimes call him, to design the emblems of the two major superpowers in my book for me. And he did a fantastic job. And I have posted those on my blog. So they're well worth checking out. I just wanted to create something that was very visual because I'm not a very artistically talented person in that way. And so having something that's like kind of concrete and related to the world of the books, I'm very excited about. And I've got some plans for those coming up. And yeah, I'm really happy to share them with everybody. So you folks here, you get a sneak peek.
Yeah, so
it's out there, but I haven't told that many people.
dmorin.com/news.
That's right.
For all
that's
of your Dan Morin news, including
that's right.
Frank's awesome emblems.
Yeah. That's Frank's Awesome Emblems is a great name for a shop.
Yeah.
You should open one of those.
You should. That's cool. All right. Have a good day, Dan. Thanks to everybody out there for being a Six Color subscriber, by the way. We really appreciate you keeping the lights on. We do. And look in your inbox for a newsletter because it should be there.
Imminently.
Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.